Let's resume our story in 1 Samuel chapter 17. We'll start at verse 24 in just one moment. First, let's remember where we got to in this story last time. It is King Saul's probably third or fourth military campaigning season of his kingdom. And he is trying to respond to a Philistine invasion of the Elah Valley. The Philistines have come from Gath, maybe some of them from Ekron. They've come up the Elah River. They've wrapped around the north and eastern side of Azekah, which is a hill there, kind of at the entrance of the Elah Valley. They're just south of Beth Shemesh a little bit. And as they come around into the Elah Valley proper, they're on the south side of the valley. And their intention is, from this base encampment, to start taking all sorts of stuff from the Israelis. It's probably harvest season and processing season of the grain. And we've seen this in the past, that the invaders come in, having let the Israelis do all the hard work, and just take what they want for themselves. The king, King Saul, has responded with his army, and they've taken up a position on the north side of the Elah Valley. And the problem is that there is a gully that's been cut by the Elah River in the center of this valley. It actually snakes through it. And nobody wants to be the first one to cross this gully. It's quite deep. When I was standing in a portion of it, it was twice my height and very steep-sided and a lot of uneven, rocky, erosion areas. That's going to put you at a great disadvantage if you are the first military group to go down into that to engage the other side, because they'll just wait until you're in there and they'll just come to the brink and they'll just pick you off like fish in a barrel. So we've ended up with a standoff for 40 days. And to add to it, we've got a giant that belongs to the Philistine side. His name is Goliath. He is somehow related to the remnant of the giants that were pushed westward out of Hebron down onto the Mediterranean coast back in the days of Caleb and Joshua. This guy is 9.5 feet tall. Now, it's interesting that the Septuagint is actually deficient at this point, and it shows up in Josephus's writing as well, where they only make Goliath 6.5 feet tall. That's not a giant by any definition. So that does not make sense, and it seems to indicate a flaw in the translation from Hebrew into Greek at that point in the Septuagint text. So he's 9.5 feet tall. He's wearing a piece of armor, his mail, his chain mail, that weighs almost 130 pounds. Now think about that. Our combat forces typically wear armor that's 30 pounds or so, depending on how much chest plate they put into their armor. It could get up to 50. So this guy's wearing 130 pounds worth. Tells you a little bit about his ability to carry weight. He's a big guy, and his armor must be appropriate to that. He has this great big thrusting spear. The point on it is about 16 pounds. I've seen some suggestions that the weaver's beam description for the shaft on this thrusting spear is probably at least 10 or 12 feet long, so that it gives him a good reach. And so altogether, we're talking about maybe 30 pounds worth of weight on this piece of equipment. And he can handle it because he's a big guy. And so he's out there for 40 days challenging the Israelis to send out an individual champion to fight against him and winner take all. If the Israeli champion wins, which would mean that the Israeli God was stronger, then the Philistines will give in and be submissive and subject to the Israelis. Or vice versa, if Goliath wins, then the Israelis have to be submissive to the Philistines. Now, of course, the deck is stacked in the favor of the giant. And so for 40 days, the Israelis never send a champion out. And so when David arrives on the 40th day, he arrives just in time. Now, he's here to visit his brothers, check up on them for dad. He arrives just in time to hear the challenge from Goliath. And he asks the question, and this is where we're going to pick up now, 17:24. All the men of Israel, when they saw the man, that is Goliath, they fled from him and were much afraid. And the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who's come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. The king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his family's house free in Israel." So David is brought up to speed, told, look, whoever kills this guy is going to be famous. And King Saul has promised that the victor can marry his daughter, his eldest daughter, and become the son-in-law to the king, pay him a whole bunch of cash, a whole bunch of gold and silver, and the promise that he and his family will never, ever have to pay another bit of taxes into the Israeli kingdom. Now, that's a pretty decent offer to kill this giant. And so David said to the men who stood by him, "What's to be done to the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? So why should he get away with this? And what did you say the person's going to get if they go out against this guy?" And the people answered him in the same way, "So shall it be done to the man who kills him." Now, Eliab, his eldest brother, now he's got three brothers that are in the military, in the militia, responding to this Philistine invasion, which tells me they're all in their early 20s, because 20 was the age of majority in Israel. And so David, being the number 8 son, with three of them being over 20, is probably right around 13 or so, maybe 14. As I said, this incursion seems to be taking place in the 13th or the 14th year of Saul's kingdom, and David was most certainly 10 years old or thereabouts when Saul became king. So his oldest brother, a combat veteran, when he heard him speak to the men, Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why have you come down? With whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption, the evil of your heart. You come down to see the battle." So this is typical older brother to younger brother. There's probably about 10 years between them. Just hassling him. "Why are you even here? Who's taking care of the sheep like you're supposed to be taking care of?" David said, "What have I done now? Wasn't it just a word?" And then he turned away from him toward another and spoke in the same way, and the people answered him again as before. Now, it always puzzles me. We know that Eliab was there the day that David was anointed by the prophet Samuel, and that's only been maybe a year and a half, 2 years at the most. And yet he is still treating David as that bothersome little kid brother instead of as the anointed of God. We continue, verse 31. When the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. Now, there is apparently an understanding here in what David is saying, is that he is actually suggesting, I think I could take him. Nobody else is going to take him. I'll take him. And so they pass this on to the king. The king knows David, by the way. David has been his entry-level military trainee, I suppose we could say. We use the term shield bearer for him in this relationship. But the bigger thing that he was hired for was because he was gifted by God to sing prophetically. There was power in his music and in his words that he sung. And so he has been hired to come and combat the evil spirit that comes upon Saul from time to time. And so David had been with Saul until this incursion happened. And then he was dismissed to go back home because Saul was going to be on maneuvers. He was going to be in bivouac, out in the field. And so David is brought before Saul. Verse 32, David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. So David boldly says to his boss, because that's effectively who Saul is, I'll take him on. Tell people to quit worrying. Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You're but a youth. He's been a man of war from his youth. Now, I want to give you a reminder of size perspective here. Goliath is about 9.5 feet tall, according to our text. The average Israeli at this time, based on the use of the 18-inch cubit, was roughly 5'9". Saul is about a foot taller than the average Israeli. So Saul is about 6'9". The average Israeli would be up to the belly button or so of Goliath, while Saul would be up to his armpit. But David is not a full-grown man yet. As I said, he's only about 13 or 14 years age. So he is still a good 2-3 inches shorter than the average Israeli adult male. So here we have this young man saying, I can take him, when he's slightly less than half, less than half of the height of the giant. And Saul's response is, no, this guy's been at this ever since he was your age. He's been trained in the martial arts. You're still a kid. We're still trying to get you the basics in some of the military stuff. Verse 34, but David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. When there was a lion or a bear and it took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and I struck him and I delivered it out of his mouth. If he arose against me, I caught him by the beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears. Now, I remind you, I believe that this is pretty fresh abilities for David. That previous to this, he was an ordinary adolescent. Yeah, he could have been brave. He could have had aspirations of being able to stand up and protect the sheep in every circumstance. But when he was anointed and the Holy Spirit came upon him, he became supernaturally charged. And so I believe these events that he's describing here happened after that anointing. And it may have even surprised him to begin with, that when that bear came, when that lion came, David didn't feel the need to run away to protect himself, but rather to charge in and grab that animal and kill it before it could do damage to the flock. And this is one of the reasons, by the way, that David started getting a reputation for being a warrior-like spirit there in Bethlehem. That's part of what got the attention of whoever it is that recommended him to King Saul. So back to verse 36, your servant has already struck down both lions and bears. This uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. So David's point is, this guy has said nasty things about God and about God's people, and he shouldn't get away with it any more than those animals, those wild animals, should have gotten away with taking my father's sheep. I will take him down by the power of God. Verse 37, David said, he who is, who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So he speaks with great confidence. And again, Saul has gotten to know him in the last year and a half, perhaps, in the last several months. And so he seems to be convinced that David should be given the chance to do this. So Saul said to David, go, and may he who is be with you. And then Saul clothed David with his armor. Now the wording is a little bit puzzling to me. Does this mean that Saul put his own armor on David? And I've actually seen some commentators suggest that, and that it was an attempt to try to confuse the enemy to think that he was the one that was going to go out there and fight this giant, and then Saul and his guys were going to go and run some sort of separate operation against the Philistines, using David kind of as bait for this. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't match what we know does happen in the story here. So I think it may be that the his here means David. So they basically went out and found David some armor in the camp. They could have found a shorter, smaller build Israeli, and they put that armor on him. Now, what would that consist of? Well, he put a helmet of bronze on his head, and he clothed him with a coat of mail. And so, very basic military armor for the period. And then David strapped his sword over his armor. Somebody loaned him a sword as well as this armor. And so now he's got who knows how many pounds. Again, go back to our more modern day military guys. They're expected to lug around, you know, 60 pounds of gear total, including their armor and their weaponry and their supplies. So David here's probably got 30, 40 pounds on him. And he tried in vain to go. That means move around. For he had not tested them. So he can't do it. He is not trained to wear this stuff and to utilize it. And you can't do that. Our military guys, they have to be trained, and they also have to bulk themselves up muscle power wise in order to do all this gear. So David can't do that, and he realizes it. And he told Saul, I cannot go with these. I've not tested them. I've not proved my ability to wear them, to utilize them. So David put them off. So he got them off himself. So now he's just back to his normal workaday clothes, which is basically a tunic, like a skirt, or like a dress that's tied up at the waist. And then he's got sandals on his feet. And so After that, he took his staff in his hand. You know, you take your shepherd's staff everywhere with you. It helps you kind of steady yourself when you're going up and down slopes. And then it can also be used to beat up on wild animals, like David used, or to kind of guide your own domesticated animals around the way you want them to go. So he's got that in his hand. And then he's got the only piece of weaponry that he knows, and that is his sling. So he took his staff in his hand, and then he chose 5 smooth stones from the brook, and he put them in his shepherd's pouch. So he does have a little pouch, a little supply bag, and his sling was in his hand, and then he approached the Philistine. So he goes down into the gully, which I've already told you is eroded, lots of rounded stones down there if you just look for them. I even brought a couple back for myself from the valley when I came back from my trip to Israel. So he finds one probably that would fit well into the palm of his hand with his fingers closed around it. That's about right, and it needs to be kind of round. So think about like a golf ball-sized smooth stone. He gets 5 of them. And again, I've heard preachers preach the idea that the reason he got 5 is because Goliath had 4 other relatives. I don't know if that's the case. It could be that he just wanted to make sure he had sufficient ammo in order to take this guy on. Now, the sling that we're talking about is not like a wrist rocket type of slingshot. The thing that I grew up with, you know, the rubber bands with the pocket, and there's a framework that you hold in your other hand, and you pull it back, and you let it go, and the rubber band does all of the work. No, this is the sling of ancient times. A couple of straps holding a pouch. You put the ammo in the pouch. You wrap one of the pieces of leather around your fingers, and the other one you pinch between your fingers, and you go round and round and round and round until you've got that that centrifugal force at its max, and then you let go at just the right moment, and these guys are well-trained over time to be highly accurate, and that ammo, that piece of rock comes out, and goes in a straight line with all that force right to the target. And so that's what he plans on doing. So now he's back up on the flat side on the other side of the gully. He's taking up the challenge. So the Philistine moved forward and came near to David. So he sees now that there's an Israeli that's come through the gully. So apparently he's being challenged. But this Israeli is not King Saul. He's not a big guy in armor. He's not a common Israeli in armor. He's some unarmored kid with a staff. So the Philistine moved forward. He came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and he saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, you know, 13, 14 years old, ruddy, which, you know, I believe that probably means he has red hair. And he was handsome in appearance. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" So he mocks him. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine gods would be the king of the gods, Dagon, and then Baal, and then Asherah, and probably multiple other ones. So he puts the curse of his gods on David. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me. I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." And then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword," which David doesn't have, "with a spear," the thrusting one, which David doesn't have, "with a javelin," which are throwing spears. David doesn't have those either. "But I come to you in the name of he who is of the armies, Yahweh Tzabaoth." This is God's military title. "The God of the armies of Israel, whom you've defied." You've been making fun of God and these people. This day, he who is will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth. And then all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that he who is saves not with spear or sword. For the battle is he who is, and he will give you into our hand. Now that is some very brave talk. It's prophetic talk. I think the Holy Spirit is speaking through me at this point. And it has the intended effect. It makes Goliath angry. And even though he had just recently been mocking David as a little kid with a stick, he now just wants to kill him. When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag. He took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his ground, on his face to the ground. So David flings this stone, which he's done this many, many times against threats, maybe target practice as well. But this stone hits Goliath right between the eyes, right at the bridge of the nose. It no doubt shatters all of that portion of the front skull and drives all of those shattered bone pieces right straight into the forebrain. And it instantly takes him down. He's not dead yet, but it takes him down. He collapses instantly on his face to the ground. And David now is going to follow up, but that's the next part of the story the next time we get into the Word.